Welcome to the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. It's great to be with everybody. Rocky's not here today, David. Rocky has court, though he was very anxious to be part of the conversation, so I anticipate that Rocky will be here. We do have a guest today. Mr. Bailey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. That's Brian. B-R-Y-A-N.
All right, Brian. It's great to have you with us today. We're very excited.
Bill Bryan.
Okay. We're very great to have you. Sorry, I don't have any notes in front of me, so I've just kind of
That's
been a long
quite
day.
All right.
Been a long day already. David, I did want to let you know my garden is under about 3 inches of water right now because I believe the water table has risen so high here with all the rain that we've had. Mr. Bryan, it's great to have you with us today. You know, last week to all our listeners, we spent the show talking about natural-born citizen for purposes of being president of the United States with Mario Puzo. We had a very interesting conversation, clearly I had not read everything on Mr. Puzo's I'd read his article, but I hadn't read the case law that he cites. And as a lawyer, it's always good to look at the case law. You know, one of the things I do for a living, David, is I actually read cases. This is what I do. And I just didn't do it before the last show. But I felt that it was a good, respectful conversation. And Mr. Bryant's got a different point of view on these cases, which is, you know, as a lawyer, I'm not surprised. It seems every case I take, there's someone on the other side who doesn't agree with me. So it's really great to have you with us today, Bill. We're really grateful you could join us. David, I'm hearing a lot of scratch in my thing. Do you hear that? Now it's better. I was okay. Good. Now it's better. You moved your headset and it was fine. Now it's back again. Maybe is your head giving static discharge? Bill, we one of the things we talked about last week, and we talked about the whole issue of who can be president of the United States as defined by our founding document, Article 2 of the Constitution of the United States.
That's right.
And it was interesting. You know, it's not something people pay a lot of attention to in the day-to-day life, but it certainly is quite relevant as we talk about this. And Bill, what I'd like you to do is tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and why you're talking about this today with me.
Okay. Let's see. I was alerted to the show by reading a birther blog called Obama Release Your Records, and so I listened to the show, and, you know, Mario Puzo's nobody new to me. He's been around for quite some time.
Tell us about yourself, though. Who are you? Tell us who you are.
Okay.
We know who Mario was.
I'm a retired attorney. I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I became interested in the birther movement pretty much from the early days, you know, June 2008, and by about the inauguration, just after the inauguration, I ran into some other people who were interested in the other side of the issue than the birther movement. And so we formed a website, and the two guys who originally formed that website eventually grew tired of following the birther movement, so I created a website. I've been foggy, in other words, foghorn leghorn online since about 2003. Partly because I live in the South, even though you can tell from my accent, I'm not really a Southerner.
Yeah, I kind of got lack of a Southern accent there.
Yeah, I do have a very loud voice like Foghorn Leghorn did. And he was one of my favorite cartoon characters. So I've been foggy for years and years and years. And so I created this website called thefogbow.com. And a fogbow is a rainbow in the fog. And So it's become pretty much the headquarters of all the, we call ourselves the anti-birthers or the birther debunkers or whatever you want to say. And there are a lot of other important websites that discuss, and probably the most important one is called ObamaConspiracy.org, which is run by a guy named Dr. Conspiracy, and he's in South Carolina. And he's a real scholar. We have, mostly what we have is a homepage that is primarily the work product of one person who lives up in Boston. And then we have a discussion forum with, we're coming up on 500,000 different posts in our discussion forum.
You have 500,000 posts about this?
Yes.
People need to get a life.
Well, you know, there's about 200 of us, and that's pretty much been a kind of a shifting number. Some people eventually get bored and move away. other people have joined us, including, you know, quite recently. People seem to just keep finding us. But yes, we've been writing about this since the original website started in January 23rd, 2009. So we're coming up on 4.5 years here next month. And, yeah, we've got almost 450,000 posts. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, you know, clearly one of the first questions.
We have about 35 lawyers, but we also have engineers. We have doctors. We have other health professionals. We have a lot of people who served in the military. We have just a kind of a real wide variety of people. Although I will tell you, you know, there's 7 billion people on the planet. And like I said, about 200 of us really follow the birther movement on the other side. And so.
Well, you know, and I thought golf was a better hobby, personally.
Yeah, but stamp collecting is way more popular than. but we enjoy it. You know, it's been very interesting. You know, and at first, of course, there was some element of, and maybe still is, of some danger to it. Because what the birthers are selling is the president is not legitimately president of the United States. And any birther worth his salt will be glad to tell you that. He is a usurper, that he has no business being in office, that as soon as the truth comes out, that everything he's ever done will be undone, which, of course, means that Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan will be thrown off the Supreme Court, and Obamacare will disappear as if by magic. And I guess Osama bin Laden will be brought back to life. We'll have to see about that.
Let me ask you some questions. So you had the first question people are going to say is, well, you're just an Obama supporter, so of course you're going to say that. I have no idea if you're an Obama supporter. You could just be a guy who believes in the Constitution.
At first, I live in North Carolina. I was a John Edwards fan. Little did I know.
Well, you know, everybody makes mistakes, you know.
You know, yeah. And then John Edwards dropped out before we found anything out about the girl Rhea or whatever her name was. And so I was, I pretty much had to choose between Hillary and Obama, who were the only ones still alive. This is back in April of 2008.
You could have chosen McCain. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I suppose I could have, but, you know, that's just not me.
All right. You know, so, I mean, he's just an Obama supporter. But that's, you know, this is actually way bigger than who's an Obama supporter, who's not an Obama supporter. Because this determines, I mean, the position of a lot of those folks, including Mario, there's a lot of Republicans that couldn't be president either.
Absolutely. I do give the birthers credit for some consistency because now that they've made up this argument about how you can't be president unless both your parents were citizens on the day you were born, they are correctly attributing that also to Bobby Jindal and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. But there is one other thing that those three people have in common, which is that their skin is a little bit darker than mine. Although I have freckles. I do have some freckles.
So let's talk about the whole issue. I mean, I don't think it's a race issue. I think it's a whole issue because you look at Ted Cruz. He's Canadian. He's born in Canada, right? Canadians are our friends.
Of a Cuban father.
True. But still, yeah. Cubans aren't Latinos. Just ask any Mexican.
No, and really, when we get into it, you know, there really is a definite distinction between children born in the United States and children born outside the United States. And right. I think Ted Cruz is eligible. I think John McCain was eligible. And those are two examples of people who were not born within the,
whole issue of, you know, who determines citizenship and how it's determined. You know, as an immigration lawyer, I'm well versed in the how you acquire citizenship. What I was not well versed in is the constitutional aspect of who's president of the United States. Because, you know, if people come to me, one of the first questions we ask people that come in is, where were you born? Where were your parents born? Where were your grandparents born? We have rules and laws over the last 80 to 90 to 110 years that can make you a U.S. citizen even if you weren't born in the United States.
We used to say anybody can grow up to be president of the United States, and until it actually happened, and then all hell broke loose, you know. But I will tell you that this whole argument about both your parents have to be citizens on the day you're born and you have to be born in the United States.
Well, let's use as an example first John McCain. So John McCain is born in Panama off the military base. Because the military base.
There's some controversy, but yeah, we think he was born off the military base because the hospital was better in Panama City.
Great. So he's born to American, clearly born to American parents in 19.
And not only that, to serving military. That's
serving military. Serving military, but yeah. Still born in 1938, 39, 37, something. I forget how old John is, somewhere around that
right.
age.
Right.
And if you go back and you look at the acquisition of citizenship rules, ignore for the fact his parents were in the military. He is still a U.S. citizen because his parents, both his parents, actually met the criteria for giving him U.S. citizenship. Birth
Absolutely.
In the United States. You know, they were U.S. citizens at the time of his birth. They'd been physically present in the United States for the requisite period of time. Therefore, he's clearly a United States citizen. No doubt about
and
it.
And I think that's important national policy, too. If you were to tell people that if you join the military and you happen to be stationed overseas, when you have children, that those children are some kind of second-class American citizens that can't run for president, you're not going to get a lot more people enlisting in the military who just think about that.
Well, it's clearly a public policy decision, absolutely.
We're not punishing people. We're not punishing their children because they enlisted in the military or decided to serve. I'm a Navy brat myself. My father went to the Naval Academy. Just like John McCain. Now, my father happened to graduate second in his class, and John McCain was fifth.
John was what do they call the guy who finished last in his class? They have a special name for them.
The anchor.
The anchor. There you go. John was the anchor.
Yeah, and it's risky. It's risky to try to be the anchor because you might actually flunk out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't think that was going to happen to the son of an anchor.
We're never going to tell the military that if you have a child overseas, that kid can't grow up to be president.
All right, so now we have the situation where we know that acquisition. Now, I will tell you this. If you look at our rules, and just a note, Brian, we do take breaks basically on the quarter of the hour, so we're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes. Let's say that John McCain's dad was married to a Panamanian woman instead of an American woman. Would John still have been a U.S. citizen at birth?
I think so. I'm almost certain.
Actually, he would have been. He would have been.
You know what?
I did look that up.
It depends on the statutes that are enforced at the time. And as Mr. Apuso correctly told you, the statutes have changed somewhat over a period of time. For a while, there was a rule that if you're a woman and you're married to a foreigner and living outside the United States, but if you had 5 years living in the United States after the age of 18.
Uh-huh.
I forget exactly the parameters. Exactly.
And that's what it's like. There's actually a good friend of mine, Bob Mautino, many years ago, probably 25 years ago, created a citizenship chart. So you can literally just ask the questions. When were you born? When was your parents born? Where did they live? And determine whether you're a U.S. citizen. So if John McCain's dad, Admiral McCain, was married to a Panamanian woman, John McCain would have been a U.S. citizen. That's the law. That would have been the fact.
Yeah.
But again,
when Mr. Apuso last week explained to you the difference between jus soli and jus sanguinis, which I'm sure was not really a brand new concept to you.
Right.
But that is jus sanguinis. In other words, if you're born within the borders of the United States, it doesn't matter who your parents are. You're eligible to be president, and you can get citizenship at birth. That's not only common law going all the way back, you know.
Well, and that was clarified by the 14th. That was clarified by the 14th Amendment as well.
And the 14th Amendment, right. So it's common law and the 14th Amendment. And but for children born outside the United States, even back in the 1600s in England, there had to be a statute that said, you know, so this classification or this category of people born outside the Kingdom of England are still natural-born subjects.
All right, Bill, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in just 1 minute or so.
Si usted tiene problemas con inmigración o asuntos que tiene que arreglar, llama a los abogados de Cook Immigration Partners. Somos en su lado. tenemos más de 50 años de experiencia haciendo las leyes de inmigración y defendiendo a los inmigrantes. Llámenos hoy a las 404-816-8611, a las 404-816-8611 o al www.immigration.net.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200, or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And America's Web Radio is the pioneer and leader in America's talk radio. And we're talking today with Bill Bryant about the natural-born citizen phenomena that are out there. And I noticed, Bill, you used the word birther a lot. And
yes.
And while I understand why you use that, and I understand why it goes both ways, and I've certainly used the words anti-birther, apparently, though, in a different context than you used them several years ago, I really want to focus on what the law says. And as we move forward, we've determined that even if John McCain's mom wasn't a U.S. citizen, he would be a U.S. citizen. The question is, would John McCain then, if his mom was Panamanian, be eligible to run for president of the United States?
And sure, I believe so.
Okay.
Anyone who's a citizen at birth, in other words, it really doesn't matter so much once you get past you were born as when you acquired citizenship. And if you acquire, there are two kinds of citizens in the United States: natural-born and naturalized. And naturalized citizens get their citizenship sometime after the day they're born.
Now, I mean, you made an interesting point. You said there are two types of citizens in the United States, not three.
No, not three.
All right, because Mario last week said there's three types of citizens.
Well,
those that are naturalized, those that are born, but natural-born for purposes of the Constitution, and then those who are natural-born. So for him, there'd be three types of citizens of the United States.
Yes, and some of the other birther attorneys have gotten up to as many as four or five different kinds of citizens. The curious thing about it all is that nobody ever articulated that third kind of citizenship until after President Obama was elected.
You know, it's an interesting point. Let's talk about that for a second. Let me ask you about that for a second, because one of my favorite presidential candidates ever was George Romney, Mitt's dad.
There you go.
Okay. George was actually born in Mexico.
I know that. Okay.
To American citizen parents who were fleeing the polygamy laws of the United States at the time. I'm also LDS, so I understand where George was coming from. And so was this issue raised in 1968?
No. No, and it also was not raised in 1856. In 1856, there was the very first time the Republican Party, newly formed Republican Party, fielded a presidential candidate. And they had two people, John McLean, who was a Supreme Court justice, and Fremont. His name escapes me at the top.
John C. Fremont.
Yes.
Oh, man, how do I know that? Oh, my God, that's scary.
he was a famous explorer.
Explorer, guess what? Fremont, California, is named after him.
Right, and he actually won the primary. But his father was a French citizen. It was kind of a scandal in the day. His father was an employee of a planter in Virginia, and the planter's wife fell in love with the French guy, and they ran off to South Carolina together. And but, you know, everybody was pretty much familiar with Mr. Fremont's heritage and that his father was a French citizen. And you would think that the guy opposing him in the primary, who was a Supreme Court justice, would be somewhat familiar with the, you know, the definition of the term natural-born citizen. And nobody ever claimed that he was ineligible. And then you go to the 2008 election. Hillary Clinton is a Yale-trained attorney. She never mentioned that, you know, she thought President Obama was ineligible. We had an attorney general of the United States back then, Michael Mukasey, who was George Bush's attorney general.
Mukasey. Right, I think it's Mukasey was his name.
Mukasey was his name. Yeah. But, you know, he's America's chief law enforcement officer and trusted with protecting the Constitution, and he never said any such thing, and really nobody did. We've got some real scholars, including there's a guy in Atlanta, Georgia, named Lauren Collins, who's done a lot of research into this, and the first time anybody mentioned that they thought that you couldn't be president unless both your parents were citizens, was after the election. There's an attorney in New Jersey, another New Jersey connection for you, Charles.
Well, I'm from Jersey. It's where all the good people are from.
I remember you told Mario Puzo that last week. So anyway, this other guy is named Leo D'Onofrio. Very colorful character. He's been in rock bands, and he's plays professional chess, and he's a very colorful guy. And he was the very first person to say, both your parents have to be citizens or you're not a natural-born citizen. But that case was filed after the election, I believe, and it was the very first time anybody had ever mentioned that. And to this day, they really haven't been able to, Mr. Apuzzo believes that I think there's probably 7 or 8, maybe 10 other attorneys that try to make that argument. But of course, there's 1.2 million attorneys in the United States, and the rest of them don't believe that's true. And Mr. Apuzzo's arguments have been brought up in court many times. In about 10 cases, which I sent you brief quotations from all those cases, in about 10 cases, the courts have actually looked at that issue. A lot of times with the birther cases. Now, we keep track of the birther cases, of course.
When you say birther case, you're talking about cases that are brought in various states or federal courts against the president, I guess, claiming that he's not eligible to serve. That's when you're talking about cases, that's what you're talking about, right?
Right. And there have been waves of them. In other words, there were a few cases filed even before the election. They all got dismissed because of lack of standing.
Okay. Well, I know there was one here in Georgia a year or two ago.
Yes, and I came down to Atlanta for that, and was in court when that one was put on. And it was interesting because that was the first time that President Obama was represented by an empty chair and won anyway.
Yeah,
just like during the convention when he went up against Clint Eastwood in an empty chair. You know, Obama does really well without even being there.
Well, I have found that it's always good to have Obama as an empty chair. It makes my life easier. let's ask about this. So
sure.
It's 1789.
Right.
Constitutional Convention. They're writing the Constitution. James Madison is.
Wait, that's 87.
87. Busy slaving away. 89 is when Washington got elected. And he's slaving away, and he gets to the who can serve as president thing. What's quite clear is they wanted to make sure that they weren't going to recreate a royalty in the United States. I mean, that
Absolutely.
Was Washington's big
because
thing,
they were worried.
Right? I mean, that was their big
because
no
they were
royalty.
Worried. You know, America was a grand experiment at that time. A lot of people thought you couldn't really be a real country if you didn't have a monarchy. You know, here we were going to have a presidency, and the presidency was going to change instead of being for life. And even, some people like, the name escapes me. But in any event, you know, it was a real experiment back then. So yeah, they had a couple of different formulations. At first, it was just going to be you had to be a citizen, but you also had to have lived here for at least 21 years.
Okay.
And then John Jay, who became the first Supreme Court justice, wrote a letter to George Washington saying, permit me to hint that in order to keep away foreign influence, we don't let anybody but a natural-born citizen become president.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, we don't have express confirmation of it, but apparently George Washington provided that letter to the Constitutional Convention, and there was a group called the Committee of 11, which was one representative from each of the 11 different states, and they came up with the formulation that actually ended up in the Constitution, which is that you have to be a natural-born citizen, you have to have been a resident in the United States for 14 years, mm-hmm. and you have to be at least 35 years old.
All right, so let's talk about that, because the first question, of course, is what did John Jay mean, and what did the writers of the Constitution mean when they wrote natural-born citizen? That's really what a lot of this argument boils down to, isn't it?
Sure, sure. And as far as the courts are concerned, and have been since forever, the term natural-born subject was a legal term of art since 1608, and there was a really old case called Calvin's case decided in England. This was just about the time that America was just beginning to be settled. But any English-trained lawyer from the early 1600s all the way up until 1787 would have known the phrase natural-born subject, not natural-born citizen, but natural-born subject.
And why would they have known natural-born subject?
Because it was a legal term of art that they were, that lawyers were trained in. You know, how do you know what ex post facto means, and how do you know what, you know, I mean, that's what you learn in law school.
And many of the writers of the Constitution were in fact trained lawyers, weren't they?
About 35 of the 55
were
either lawyers or they had some legal training.
Well, and David appreciates that, 'cause that's why the country runs so well. It was started by lawyers.
Yeah.
He's just smiling here. Not a chance. Well, if we had doctors running the Constitution, it wouldn't be nearly as good, I can assure you.
No, but health care would be a lot more affordable, wouldn't it?
Yeah, right. So we got this Calvin, this old Calvin's case, which predates,
right.
You know, basically almost the founding of America.
And we had Blackstone's commentaries.
Right. So Blackstone, and, you know, we still use Black's Law Dictionary today, which is kind of a successor to Blackstone's legal commentaries. But as I teach in my law school class at the university,
the common law of England, and his Blackstone's commentaries was published about 10 years before the American Revolution, and it really kind of it was a great resource for anybody who wanted to study the English common law.
And so Calvin's case really puts us on the path of jus soli, that if you're born in the kingdom, you are a citizen of the kingdom. Right? That's
correct.
That's what basically Calvin's case says. That the idea of assigning nationality at birth, the jus sanguinis, was actually a civil law creation as opposed to jus solis, which is kind of a very much an inherent law and a natural law.
Correct.
All right. We're going to take another break here, Bill, so we can pay our bills, which I think I'm paying. And we'll be right back to talk more about this. Thanks a bunch. Be right back.
Si usted ha casado con un ciudadano, o tiene problemas con inmigración, o tiene una oferta de trabajo, llama a los abogados de Cook Immigration Partners. Somos en su lado. Con más de 100 años de experiencia en la ley de inmigración, conocemos la ley y sabemos cómo ayudarle. Llámalos hoy a las 404-816-8611, a las 404-816-8611, o visítenos al www.immigration.net.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200, or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. We have Bill Bryan from Raleigh, North Carolina with us. By the way, I did notice there's an article about you in the Huffington Post, which is actually just a copy of an article that was in the Raleigh News Observer, but I thought it was a fascinating article about you. But getting back to, we started with Calvin's case. We talked about Jussolis. Now, one interesting point about Jussolis, that's not the law in every country, is it? Just because you're born there doesn't mean you're a citizen. In fact, many of the countries in the Middle East, particularly Saudi Arabia, if you're born there, you are not a Saudi citizen.
True, and I think in a lot of European countries, too. I'm not familiar with all the different laws of various European countries, but I've heard that jus sanguinis is the law in a lot of other countries.
It really is very interesting that was the case and is the case today. That's why all the Palestinians that are born in Saudi Arabia aren't Saudi citizens, by the way. It creates – and it's really interesting because by not having a jus solis, you actually create a problem in your country on who is a citizen because then you're tracing everything by blood as opposed to where you were physically born. Now, last week, Mario spent a lot of time talking about Emmer de Vital's Law of Nations. Now, I haven't gone back and read the entire Law of Nations, but the Law of Nations, which was published in French. Now, we know Blackstone was published 1766, something like that.
Blackstone's came out in over a four-year period. There were four books, and the first one came out in 1765.
Oh, 65. And Vital came out.
Vital was a little bit earlier than that. He was published in 1758, I believe.
That's right. Of course, it's in French, so now it's up to us to translate. Now, I don't know how your French is. My French sucks. His point is that the American writers of the Constitution took the wording natural-born citizen from Vattel, apparently not from Blackstone.
He did make that argument, and he's been making that argument, by the way, for about 4 years and has been unable to persuade very many people with it. But yeah, Mario thinks that our law was came from French law that our Constitution did, and I guess he thinks that the right to remain silent was put in there to protect mimes.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, because it really goes to the other issues. The book was written in French, and I'm going to imagine there were some French speakers at the Constitutional Convention.
Sure.
But when was Vattel translated into English for the common man, for most of the rest who didn't speak French?
It was translated a couple different times. I don't have the exact names and dates. We have been able to find out that Vattel was never translated into, the French sentence that Vattel people focus on uses the word indigenes, I-N-D-E.
Right. Les natras à l'indigène François qui font nos dans les pas des provinces centions.
Okay. Yeah,
I just faked the French accent, by the way. I clearly can't speak French.
It was not. It was not translated as natural-born citizens until a translation that was published in 1797, which, of course, was 10 years after this constitutional convention.
What is?
Not only that, when you look at the, there are a lot of English common law terms in the Constitution, including when they didn't particularly like a common law definition. For example, the word treason had a common law definition. They actually redefined it in the Constitution so that people would understand that in the case of treason, they were not sticking strictly to the English common law definition. But with the natural-born subject being translated into That was purely a function of we weren't going to have a monarchy. We weren't going to have subjects. We were going to have citizens. And so they did change that one word. But at the same time, they, you know, it was a very commonly understood phrase. Now, the curious thing really about that is, think about it. In those days, women could not vote. But they didn't say natural-born male citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And there were free blacks back then, of course, in Boston and elsewhere, and I don't think they could vote, and it didn't say natural-born white male citizens. And, of course, you couldn't vote unless you owned land until almost 1850.
Right.
And but they didn't put landowners either. I mean, it was really...
So what you're saying, it's a very expansive term.
It really is. I think it was a very inclusive term, and they, you know, of course, I think, you know, they were who they were. If they had thought about it, they would have said white male landowning citizens, and then we wouldn't be having this.
We certainly wouldn't be having. We have a lot fewer presidents of the United States who would qualify.
Yeah.
I don't think Bill Clinton would have ever become president since he owned any land.
But natural-born citizen was really, and like I said, as far as the law is concerned, it encompasses anyone born in the United States. Now, of course, that means that a child born to two illegal immigrants might be considered...
We call them undocumented immigrants on our show, by the way.
All right. Well, you know, I understand you're an immigration attorney.
Right.
We'll say undocumented.
No, and that's because that's the way our law, I believe, has always been, as the Supreme Court ruled in Kim Ark. But also, clearly, the 14th Amendment made it crystal clear, that if you're physically born in the U.S., you are a U.S. citizen, period.
Correct. And no... Going back into history, I mean, going back, if you look at civics textbooks, if you look at texts that are used in teaching constitutional law in law schools all across the United States, if you go all the way back to the founding of this country, there never is a textbook or anything that says that Mario Puzo's right and there's three different kinds of citizens.
Okay.
And he brought up the cases Minor v. Happersett and Wong Kim Ark, and I think he's misinterpreting those, and that's been brought to his attention by literally dozens of attorneys, and he resolutely sticks to his definition, and we resolutely stick to ours. The difference is that ours has been upheld by the courts, and his has not.
All right, so
ever.
And that really is the key so far for Mario, is he hasn't won his case anywhere.
But he will tell you that he wins all the time because his reasoning is better.
Well, no, he didn't tell me that, and he certainly didn't say it on the show. But he also didn't say he lost.
Go look at his blog post. I've kind of been teasing him this week.
On the show, he didn't say anything about winning. And
yeah, and
so
on his blog, he's informed me five times this week that he wins because his reasoning is better, and that all the lawsuits that have gone against him and his arguments are just wrong because the judges don't understand.
Well, let's look at the very first case, because, I mean, we're both lawyers, right? The very first case that talked about citizenship of a child born in the U.S. was Lynch versus Clark, which is a New York case.
Right.
Kind of the summary is Tom Lynch owned a half interest in some very valuable land around Saratoga Springs, New York, where, of course, there was a spring and a racetrack. He died without children, leaving a brother and a niece by another brother as potential heirs. At the time, under the law, only a citizen could inherit land, because state legislators can do whatever they want in that regard. So Bernard, who is a brother, was a citizen of Ireland at the time of Thomas's death. Julia, who was the niece by another brother, had been born in the state of New York during a visit to the U.S. by her parents. So her parents weren't U.S. citizens. Less than 6 months after her birth, she moved back to Ireland, and she'd never come back to the United States. A year after Thomas died, Bernard moved to the U.S. and became a citizen and obtained special permission to inherit the land. And the end of the day, what the court found was that Julia was a U.S. citizen, was the only appropriate heir of the entire estate of Thomas because she was born in the United States.
Poor Bernard, he was trying to cheat his niece out of the estate, and in the end, he got nothing and she got it all.
You know, this is what I love about the old cases. One, they're only like 3 pages long because they could write a lot better back then and had to write by hand, not these 80-page decisions come out of the Supreme Court today. But two, they had really interesting facts. This is a very interesting set of facts about this. And yeah. The court was really very clear where it said this. It is an indisputable proposition that by the rule of the common law of England, if applied to these facts, Julia Lynch was a natural-born citizen of the United States. Now, this is a case from 1844. So this is only 60 or so years after the Constitution. It's the first case to address the issue that anybody's found that I'm aware of. I don't know of any cases before that that talk about this issue. Now, granted, it was a New York State case, but it's, again, it's the only case out there. The idea, courts quoted this, and the Constitution itself contains a direct recognition of the subsisting common law principle in the section that defines qualification for president. No person except a natural-born citizen, blah, blah, blah. So this court ruled that mere birth in the United States would have qualified Julia to become president of the United States if she met the other criteria, and she wasn't a woman in 1844. I mean, that's Lynch. That's the very first case. Now, the minor case is now 31 years later, 1875. It's after the passage of the 14th Amendment. The holding in Minor is not – and again, we have a lot of nine lawyers that listen. The holding is the relevant part of the case. There are always other things written in a decision, which we call dicta, which aren't key to the case but are either both interesting or, if they help you, are important. That's how I figured out what dicta is.
Right. They help your understanding.
Right. And so
the important issue.
Right. And in dicta in Minor what really did Minor find? And this is a Supreme Court case in 1875.
Well, I can read that part. I do actually have that in front of me. Basically, the Minor court, and it was a unanimous decision. And now, of course, remember, what the case was really about was that Virginia Minor was suing because she claimed that the 14th Amendment, since it explicitly made her a citizen, that it also gave her the right to vote. It was a women's.
This is the very first Women's Voting Rights Act case.
Right. And so it said, at common law, it was never doubted that all children born of parents who were citizens in the and born in the country became themselves also citizens. These were natives or natural-born citizens. Some authorities go further and include children born within the jurisdiction without reference to the citizenship of their parents. Now, here's the key sentence. As to this class, there have been some doubts, but never as to the first. For the purposes of this case, it's not necessary to solve those doubts.
So Minor...
Now, you're an attorney. You understand that what that means is we're not deciding that issue today.
Right. What the Supreme Court said in Minor is we're not going to tell you what a natural-born citizen is as it pertains to whether both parents are born here or not.
And because Virginia Minor wasn't a jus soli only, she actually did have American citizen parents too.
So it really so wasn't necessary to their hence dicta.
Right, it wasn't part of their analysis. It didn't need to be included in their analysis because it didn't really apply to her.
And the important thing as a lawyer that you have to know, people that aren't lawyers, is you can't cite dicta to support your case. So if you're taking your case to another court and you say, well, the Supreme Court said in this. If it's dicta, if it wasn't relevant to the decision of the case, it carries significantly less weight.
Well, Mr. Appuzzo needs to learn that. But in any event, the doubts that he expressed, a few people have actually made that argument throughout history. One of them helped write the brief in a case later on called Wong Kim Ark.
Now, Wong Kim Ark, I'm getting the message from David that we're going to enter our last break here. But I do want to add, Wong Kim Ark is a 1898 case, which I actually wrote a blog about several years ago because of the movement within some groups in the country to claim that if your parents are undocumented, you're not a citizen. And I think Wong Kim Ark solved that problem for basic citizenship issues. But we're going to talk about how it also deals with the issue of natural-born citizen. Let's take a break, our last break here on the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. We'll be right back.
Soy Charles Cook, el jefe del grupo de abogados Cook Immigration Partners. Estoy en su lado. Con más de 20 años de experiencia con la ley de inmigración, conozco cómo ayudarle. Sé la ley y sé que alguna gente podemos ayudar. Llámanos hoy a las 404-816-8611. A las 404-816-8611. O visítenos en el internet www.immigration.net.
Moms, dads, listen to my radio program, Homeschooling for Today, on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you'll learn all about how to homeschool on America's Web Radio.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. Bill, it's great to have you back. I hope you've enjoyed your time so far on the Immigration Hour. We tend to have a lot of fun here.
I'm
disappointed. Rocky is going to be disappointed he wasn't here today because he wanted to be part of this.
We can do another one. You know, yeah.
Next week we got to get back to actual immigration stuff.
Oh darn.
Kim Wong Ark, 1898, written by Chief Justice Waite. So this case came as a result of the exclusionary laws enacted against the Chinese who were in the United States.
To try to basically kick them out.
It was really, really some of our very first anti-immigration laws that passed Congress. After the Chinese had come here as temporary workers, although we had no immigration laws back then, built the railroads, settled here, we basically wanted to kick them all out. Wong was born in San Francisco to Chinese citizen parents, was it Julia from the Minor case?
Right.
Made a brief visit to China, 1890, returned without incident, went 1894 to China, and returned the following year. And actually, it was an immigration inspector at Angel Island that denied his entry on the ground. He was not a U.S. citizen. So this all comes out of an immigration officer inspection at the port of entry in San Francisco, Angel Island. So he appeals. He gets denied. The court rules a couple things. One, that Mr. Wong was clearly a U.S. citizen because of the 14th Amendment and jus soli. And that's when I wrote my blog, I only focused on the 14th Amendment. I didn't really focus on the whole jus soli argument. But tell us how this case reinforces what a natural-born citizen is.
Well, they only occasionally kind of hinted toward, again, they didn't need to decide if he was eligible to be president because he wasn't running for president.
Right.
The closest in that decision that I found of what they said, it said every child born in England of alien parents, in other words, let's say Chinese, was a natural born subject unless it was the child of an ambassador or other diplomat.
Which is our current law. The same rule
was in force in all the English colonies on the continent down to the time of the Declaration of Independence. And in the United States afterward, and continue to prevail under the Constitution as originally established. Now, that does not specifically say, therefore, we rule that Mr. Wong is eligible to be president of the United States, because, again, that wasn't the issue before them. But you could tell from the government's brief in that case and from the dissent that was written by Chief Justice Fuller that the import of that decision was that not only was Mr. Wong a citizen, he was a citizen from birth, and he was a natural-born citizen. And in the government's brief, it said, if we let Chinese people become eligible for the presidency, then U.S. citizenship isn't worth having anymore.
Well, and that was certainly a reflection of the time, wasn't it?
It was. There was a lot of racism back then, and we've hopefully a little bit of progress since then, but
I think this quote is really from the government's brief, not even from the decision, but from the government's brief. Are Chinese, and this is I guess from a blog I believe you wrote, Are Chinese children born in this country to share with the descendants of the patriots of the American Revolution the exalted qualification of being eligible to the presidency of the nation, conferred by the Constitution in recognition of the importance and dignity of citizenship by birth? And the court...
In other words, if we lose, he's eligible. He is eligible.
Yeah, clearly that was the government's position. Absolutely.
And the government lost. And Mr. Wong, if anybody had bothered to elect him, now you got to remember, there have been, you know, counting from the beginning when we had just a few million people up to now when we have about 313 million people, a lot of people have been born and died. I would say there have been about a billion Americans over the course of history, natural-born citizen Americans. 43 of them have actually been elected to the presidency, so it isn't like
44.
It isn't like it comes 40, up every 40, day,
the, you know? 44. Obama's number 44.
No, 43 because Grover Cleveland served twice.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Sorry.
There's actually only 43 men that have.
And 42 because Ford wasn't elected either.
Okay, there we go. And I think there was another one who wasn't elected, but 43 have served as president. Let's say that.
So we've got these three very old cases, long established case law. Nothing said about Mr. Romney in 1968. Nothing said about the fact that Mitt Romney himself was probably a Mexican citizen as well, by the way.
Also, Chester Arthur, his father, we actually agree with the birthers that Chester Arthur's father was not a citizen on the day he was born, and nobody ever brought that up. There was some attempt to claim that he was born outside the country. When that passed, nobody bothered talking about his dad.
Well, and isn't that the fallback argument of people who say, okay, let's say you're right, and natural born is held one day by the Supreme Court to be anybody who's just born in the United States, regardless of their parentage, then prove to me you're actually born in the United States.
Yeah.
And by the way, your birth certificate isn't good enough.
Well, of course, your birth certificate is good enough, you know. What can I say?
Okay. So if
we're going to talk about President Obama's birth certificate, we really do need to do a whole second hour.
Well, absolutely. And that's a whole other issue. That's kind of the backup argument from what I understand.
And the birthers have a third issue, which is that even if he was born a natural-born citizen in Hawaii, that he lost his citizenship in Indonesia somehow when he was...
And we know under our own national laws, you can never lose your citizenship. Ever.
Correct.
Ever. You can't lose it. Unless you physically give it up, you can't lose it.
My entree into the world of fighting the birthers was I would try to explain that. I would tell them, you know, American citizenship is not the fragile thing you think it is, that your mom can take it away from you when you're 6 years old. But, then I would be kicked off that website. All right.
So since Obama's been president, there's a number, I don't know how many cases have come out that have been brought against him. A dozen, 10, I mean, I don't know, on this issue.
207 so far.
207, okay.
207, but that also includes cases not just challenging him at the beginning, but starting in about 2011, they decided that in 2010 they decided to try to pass state laws saying that you couldn't be president unless you showed your birth certificate officially, which
That was introduced in Arizona, but never made
right,
it.
Right, and Governor Brewer vetoed it. And then starting in late 2011 and all through 2012, there were a whole series of cases trying to sue secretaries of state of the various states to try and get them kicked off the ballot. So, you know, you can't put an ineligible president on the ballot. And a couple of those are still pending. There's one down in Mississippi that is still pending to try and get them kicked off the ballot. And, of course, we're like, okay, does that mean that they're going to take away Mississippi's electoral votes?
I don't think Obama won Mississippi. I don't think that was a
concern. Anyway, right? Yeah, we don't have a problem with that. So
that seems to be moot at this point.
You
know, a number of these cases are fascinating because of the holdings. I mean, what the court held at the end of the day. A lot of it goes back to Ann Kenny, which is a 2010 decision from Indiana, where somebody named Ann Kenny was suing the governor of Indiana. I'm assuming to get Obama kicked off the ballot or something. I'm not really quite sure what the bottom part of it was. But the court looked at Minor, looked at Kim Wong Ark, and concluded that birth in the borders of the United States means that you are a natural-born citizen regardless of the citizenship of your parents.
And now what is that going to mean when the child of undocumented immigrants comes along?
Well, I mean, that's going to happen. I mean, there are already people.
That might happen in our lifetimes, Charles.
Oh, no, it's going to happen in our lifetime. I mean, right now in Congress, there is at least three individuals whose parents were undocumented at some point.
Right.
And so it's definitely out there. There's federal judges whose parents were undocumented at some point. And that's why I think it's important to, you know, settle the issue if it's not already settled. It seems to be well settled at the Supreme Court level with Kim Wong Ark. And, you know, what's interesting I get from people, and this is true on a lot of different issues, not just this issue. Well, that was a long time ago. The Supreme Court doesn't take the short view of cases.
Right.
They take the long view. And if they say, well, we decided this in 1898, they're not going to touch it again. They're just not.
It's been settled law. It's been settled law for more than 120 years. And it's not going to change. And this is, you know, it's been infuriating for the birthers that the Supreme Court has just turned down one case after the next. More than a dozen of the birther lawsuits have been appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. They go into their Friday conference where they decide what they're going to listen to and what they can't, what they're not, because, you know, they can only take a small, very small percentage of the cases people bring to them. And they're not going to reconsider settled law for over 100 years.
They have too much other cases to worry about.
They actually have really important things that are going to guide, you know, policy for the future of the country.
You know, what's interesting is the other cases that are out there. You had besides being a Georgia lawyer, I'm also an Arizona lawyer, because that's where I went to law school. And Arizona, of course, has been a hotbed of a lot of this stuff. Now, there's no court of appeals case out of, you know, it's just a superior court case out of Pima County, which is in Tucson.
Right. I don't know why they didn't take that up any higher.
The judge in Pima County, I don't know which judge this was. Maybe it was one of my classmates at this point. I don't know. But the U.S. Constitution fully supports that Obama is a natural-born citizen and thus qualified to hold office. Minor versus Happersett does not hold otherwise. The Tisdale versus Obama case in 2012, it's well settled that those born in the U.S. are considered natural-born citizens. Purpura versus Obama from April of 2012, no court, federal, state, or administrative accepted a challenger's position that Obama is not a natural-born citizen.
Now, wait a minute. This Purpura case, that's out of New Jersey, and Mario Puzo was the attorney who litigated that case.
Well, Mario lost that case. Here's the bad news.
Well, he won that case because his logic was better than the judge's when the case was decided. Yeah. But
nonetheless, the ruling is not in his favor. Now, here's the bad news, Bill. Our time is up. It's been a terrific show. Great talking to you. I've appreciated the other point of view. I mean, it's fascinating for me as a lawyer to read the cases and see things.
We have a radio show of our own, and we are definitely really interested, and we've been following the immigration reform law, and so I'm gonna invite you onto our radio show next.
I'd love to be on that. Bill, have a great week. David, it's been a delight to do this show again. We'll be back next week on the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.